From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made last summer in Rochester when the Open Door Mission found what they thought was the ideal location for a new long-term residential care facility. Their goal was to help women and their children, women and kids in need of stability. Think of how many Rochester students don't show up for school each day. Many of them don't have a permanent home. But the plans to renovate an old church sparked some blowback from the 19th Ward Community Association, and ultimately, Open Door had to look elsewhere. Well, just recently, the town of Gates stepped in with a plan. There's a building on Coldwater Road, a former convent, that could be exactly what Open Door needs. And more importantly, neighbors seem to be on board. The town's on board. This hour, a conversation about helping women and their children in need, and about what Open Door is going to do next. Let me welcome my guests for the hour. Mike Hennessy is the executive director of the Open Door Mission. Mike, welcome back.
Thanks, Evan.
Anna Valeria Eistman's here, women's program director with the Open Door Mission. Anna, welcome to you.
Thanks, Evan.
And Mark Cassini's here, Gates Town Supervisor. Mark, welcome to you as well.
Thanks. Honored to be here with the great Evan Dawson and the KG veteran, Randy Gorman.
Well, he is popped
KG veteran. I'm going to write that on my resume.
I've never heard you called KG. Lots of other
my LinkedIn profiles.
KG. Well, Randy is popping in briefly because we have some news to report on Dean Skelos, and a lot of our listeners have been following the sentencing
sure.
for the former Senate Majority Leader. What's going on,
sure.
Randy?
Sure. Well, minutes ago, Judge Kimba Wood, she's a federal judge in New York City, did sentence Dean Skelos, the former Senate Majority Leader, to 5 years in federal prison. Now, that was a lot less than what the prosecutors wanted. They wanted 12 to 15 years. You may remember that Assembly Majority Leader Sheldon Silver, the former leader, recently got a 12-year prison sentence. Some of her comments, Evan, during that sentencing, she said, though the dollar amount of Skelos' corruption plan, as she put it, pales in comparison to Silver's, she said the effect of your crime has much in common with his. She basically said that he had begun to ignore what she called his moral compass and felt that, unlike what the defense wanted in terms of just having something like community service, she said really that public corruption has to be punished. So again, a 5-year sentence for Skelos, a lot less than the sentencing guidelines, which they don't always follow, which was I think something like 12 to 15 years,
yep.
and $500,000 fine. His son Adam implicated again in terms of these kinds of no-show jobs and corruption allegations. He's about to be sentenced shortly, and we'll have that for you online as well at WXXINews.org and on our Twitter at WXXINews account as well.
And Randy, the big picture, so Sheldon Silver got 12 years.
Right.
Dean Skelos, 5.
Mm-hmm.
And the New Yorker just had an extended profile of Preet Bharara, in which, very interestingly in that profile, the interviewer asked him, you know, or said to him, it was interesting that in January you kind of publicly cleared the governor. And Bharara said, I did not.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I said in January, we don't have evidence to pursue charges. That's not clearing him. And so will there be other sort of investigations? We don't know. There's a lot of scuttlebutt about what's going on with economic development councils.
The Buffalo Billion
the FBI.
And a lot of tentacles
right.
from that. So that story is still obviously
ongoing,
to be told.
Yeah.
But for right now, this is just, if you want to call another feather in Barrera's cap. But of course, he was really going after the legislative leaders for corrupt activities. And I don't know if they'll be happy with the sentence, but at least they did get both convicted and both getting jail time.
Yeah, remarkable. Thank you, Randy Gorman,
okay.
WXXI News Director, popping in with that. All right, let's turn our attention to what's going on in Gates, not in Rochester, and just want to mention a couple of things here. As we talk about the Open Door Mission and this long-term residential care facility for women and kids, you know, Mark Cassini and the town of Gates step in to help, and we're going to be talking about that. Now, Mark's running for Congress, and the cynics in the audience may think, well, it's good timing, you know, it's a pretty good political headline, but Mark, I know that you are very interested in making sure people understand sort of your history on this issue and some of your background, and go ahead.
Well, first, I have been a big supporter of affordable housing. We have the only true affordable housing community neighborhood in the county of Monroe. It's Crerand Commons, which has been in town for well over 10 years. So I've been a big supporter of Crerand Commons and the expansion of Crerand Commons to come. And so that, coupled with the fact that I've been involved with Unite Rochester from the very beginning, anybody that thinks that I haven't been an advocate for affordable housing or this is something out of the blue or simply political, it just wouldn't be consistent with my position from day one.
Mark is running for Congress. He's challenging Congresswoman Louise Slaughter. She will be on this program in a couple of weeks, and we always offer equal time. So later in the hour, we might touch on some issues apart from this with Supervisor Cassini. But let's wade through some of this history. And Mike Hennessy, with the Open Door Mission, I guess it goes back, from what I have read, to 2011 or 12, that your organization decided this was a need that you wanted to pursue?
Yeah, we had come to the conclusion that, there's women show up at our doors. We can feed and clothe them. We didn't have any housing options for them. When that happens over and over, we We do our best to find beds. Sometimes there's beds, sometimes there's not. But we have programs that we'd like to offer. So as a private organization, we get this luxury of stepping back and looking at the entire government-funded funding streams of housing for women and children in the community, and we look for the biggest crack we could find. Where could we do the most good? And we kept running into this big crack with these 2,000 homeless kids within the Rochester City School District, defined as homeless by they don't have a permanent address. They're couch surfing. They're not typically in school. 42% of the kids, K-3, chronically absent from school. These are the kids that you see our current superintendent, the last one, Bolgan Vargas, knocking on doors trying to find, because these kids are registered in his school, but he can't find them because they're moving from house to house and they're on an unstable living and they're in crisis. So we thought if we don't, as a privately funded organization, help these kids, who will? Because they're not funded by HUD. And so we decided that was the population we would work on. And if we could have an impact on these families and get these moms or grandmas, whoever the guardian is into a 6 to 9 to year-long program, get the moms stabilized, get the kids back into school immediately, get the moms the skill sets and job training and GEDs, whatever it is that they need to get into a stable living environment, then we could have a major impact on these families.
Every time I've seen you and Anna talk about this, you stress a point that this is not a shelter.
Nope.
Why?
Because a shelter is a very short-term transient stay that's there to get stabilized and out the door in a matter of days or weeks. This is a six-month program that's and I'm going to let Anna talk a little bit about more how the structure is set up and the big differences.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, it's certainly not an emergency shelter. Like Mike said, emergency shelter is very, very temporary. So we want to actually provide enough time to get these families stable. And it takes much more than as soon as you're in the door, you got to be out the door structure. And transitional housing is actually something that we're seeing is being slowly cut from the funding from HUD. And we, you know, just recently the county announced that we received an enormous amount of HUD HUD cuts this year, and mostly to programs that have to do with support services and transitional housing, which is devastating, absolutely devastating, because we strongly believe that these programs really are effective. Transitional housing is necessary. Not everyone is ready to go from crisis to complete independence. Not everyone is ready for that. A lot of times folks need that transitional time to get stable.
And Anna, our listeners, you know, may follow conversations about housing, transitional housing, but sometimes following the funding sources can be difficult. So again, HUD funding comes from where?
HUD. The federal government.
The federal government.
Federal Housing,
right?
And Urban Development.
Yeah. Right.
I thought that was a trick question. Okay. No, okay, good.
No, this is a case where this is federal dollars.
Help
yes,
me.
These are federal dollars.
And when we talk about a cut like this, mm-hmm. how significant are we talking about?
About 70 beds. And
70 beds.
Yes, and about 1,700 individuals losing case management.
Okay.
So we say, so the county wants to push housing first, permanent supportive housing. But when Housing First and folks in permanent supportive housing don't have the support services, they're subject to recidivism.
Okay. And what is being proposed here, what Open Door is trying to do, and just because they found the location in Gates doesn't mean it's going to happen. They're going to have to raise money. We'll talk about that in a minute. But what you want to do isn't going to cure everything. I mean, it's not going to fill, you know, Mike talked about 2,000 plus kids in just the Rochester City School District who are technically homeless. Mm-hmm. What kind of help are we talking about for how many beds?
Let me stop you
yeah,
if
yeah,
I
sure.
could, Evan. When you say it's not going to fix everything, I think this is one of the most significant programs that has come forward in a long time to address the homeless population that the Open Door Mission is trying to address. These are the people that Bolgan Vargas is going out and trying to get to go to school, and they're living in cars, they're living on couches, et cetera, et cetera. Specifically, if this program follows the plan, you're talking about 10% of the homeless population in a given year will be given this transitional housing opportunity. And if you can get a good portion of those families back on their feet, that's a significant dent. And that's not going to take a blue ribbon panel or a blue ribbon commission or 8 more studies. It could happen rather quickly. So this is significant. This is not a minor thing. This can really have put a dent in the homeless population.
All right. So Mike Hennessy, last summer, it didn't work out in the city of Rochester in the 19th ward. I know some supporters of the Open Door Mission were frustrated with that, but you had to look elsewhere. How did you end up in Gates? What happened?
Well, you know, when we went in front of the City Planning Commission twice, and we were turned down twice, and there was just a vehement objection to us being there, and we started thinking, you know, is this really the environment that we want to be in for our moms? And the thought came, you know, we're struggling here. I don't want to struggle and go through this again. Let's call Mark and see what he would think of it. And Mark just invited us out, put us in his car, and we drove around and looked at buildings for a day. And we found this building and fell in love, and he's been supporting it ever since. So it's just, you know, we still don't totally understand the resistance, but, you know, where we are, we're extremely happy with.
Okay. And go ahead, Anna.
If I could just add, and for the reasons that Mark talked about earlier was why we went to him first, because, you know, we know that Mark's been a long time advocate for affordable housing. I've been, you know, working with the DNC for the past couple of years in the editorial board in Unite Rochester. So we knew that this was a potentially friendly environment to go to. So that's why he was our first choice to seek out outside of the city.
Okay. And obviously, Open Door, everyone kind of knows where that is and what your mission has been there. Does this impact your relationship with the city of Rochester?
I hope not. Okay. Not from our end. No, not at all.
Okay. So Mark, you drove them around. You had ideas. Did you know, tell us what this building is and kind of, you know, did you know going out there that you thought this would fit?
Just so your listeners know, Evan, this is in my neighborhood. It's not, I'm not taking them somewhere far, far away from where I live. This is right in my neighborhood. And I know the rectory well. It was very, a beautiful facility. It's the church I attend, Holy Ghost. And unfortunately, for the last few years, last six, 7 years, it's been empty. And it's gone the way of a lot of churches and a lot of rectories. They are no longer being utilized. And the church has had a heck of a time. I'd say hell of a time, but it's a Catholic church, so I don't want to say that. they had a heck of a time trying to fill it. And so I knew this facility was available. I knew its capabilities. I knew how many rooms it had. I was very familiar with it and said, wow, that, you know, the light bulb went off. If you're a believer, and I am, I'm not one of the better team members, but I'm on the team. You sometimes think this is fate. It's God putting something in your head going, hey, you know, Asini, there's a place over here. Remember? You remember? Oh, yeah, that's right. And it was a perfect fit. It was almost like it was fate. So,
you know, I'll add to that. When we first met with the deacon board of the church to tell them what we were thinking about for this building, they came up to us after with tears in their eyes saying, this is the use we were praying for when we put it up for sale in the first place.
Is it fair to say, Mike, that that is as big a contrast as you can imagine to the reception you got last year?
Yeah, it was remarkable. It was remarkable, the difference.
There has to be some neighbor somewhere. Have you had any resistance? Is any phone call, I'm not sure about this?
I have not received any phone call in resistance to this. We had people with concerns. They were concerned about the type of facility. Mm-hmm. They were concerned about what would happen to the neighborhood, what would happen if there weren't parameters put around the operation. But I have to tell you, it was the church obviously was just absolutely thrilled. It was a prayer answered for them. But the neighbors, it was one of the most beautiful things I've experienced. You know, I've been through projects where you get every neighbor coming out, you know, ready to hit you in the head with a shovel and ride you out of town on a rail, not high speed. And we may as well have a little fun with this while we can. But this was so much different. It was absolutely beautiful. Once the neighbors understood and Michael and Anna talked to them and I talked to them and we explained what it was. They became so receptive and very warm and actually welcoming. And I was just so proud. The school district was excited about it. I talked to Kimberly Ward. She wanted to know what she could do. Several of the churches in the community wanted to help. The neighbors were welcoming. Holy Ghost Church was welcoming. The town board was welcoming. We didn't have anybody speak in opposition to this.
Not one.
Not one person.
Crickets. Is there anyone in opposition to this? And there were crickets. It was, I almost lost it on the floor. I almost started just bawling.
I just want to say it one more time. I am so proud of my neighbors for being kind and for being open-hearted, because these are the people that need our help, and we're going to give it to them. The Open Door Mission is going to give it to them, and it's basically because the neighbors were kind, generous, welcoming, and open-hearted about it.
All right, let's talk about what happens next then. First of all, you got to raise a good amount of money. You're doing that now?
Yeah, so we have one more hurdle. The town was the biggest hurdle. We have one more hurdle to before we have a squared away purchase agreement. That's the whenever there's real property changes hands between a non-for-profit and someone else, there has to be a state Supreme Court blessing on it. So we're going from a Christian organization, not-for-profit, to another one. So it, once we get it in front of that judge, should be a done deal. Once that happens, we go into some renovations and we go into quiet fundraising with some donors who have been with us for several years getting this project ready. We need to raise our annual fund in fourth quarter of this year. So we need to do that, focus on that for the rest of the year. You'll be hearing from us in the spring where we'll come with a complete widespread community-wide campaign to give the community an opportunity to bless this organization. When it's funded, we'll open it in the fall.
Okay. Did you mention a dollar? Did I miss a dollar figure? How much you're trying to raise?
About $1.5 million all overall. Yeah.
Okay. And best case scenario is you open in the fall of next year, right?
Yes.
In time for the school year.
Oh, yes.
The school, the kids involved here may end up going to Gates School? How is this going to end up working for the kids?
That's an interesting dynamic because we're in Gates. The moms will have an opportunity to choose the district that their kids are registered in now, and the district will bus them and back into the city school, and that's fine with us. They will have the opportunity to register in a Gates school, and it'll be up to the mom.
Okay, and I want to read an email because I have no intention of offending any listeners or making this sort of a he said, she said, but I want to address this because we got an email from a woman named Marta who writes to us and says, we're disappointed the 19th Ward Community Association was not invited to be a part of the conversation about the Open Door Mission facility today. The 19th Ward is an incredibly diverse and welcoming neighborhood. We actually have more group homes per square mile than any other city neighborhood. We have two convents in the neighborhood, which were successfully turned into residential facilities. Both of these facilities have parking and green space and were already zoned for residential. We support the good work of Open Door Mission, and we reject the accusation of NIMBY attitudes in the 19th Ward. That's from Marta. I certainly don't want to offend you. The reason that we didn't reach out to the 19th Ward is the conversation today is sort of about having moved on. All I wanted to do was sort of establish why they ended up in Gates and where they are, because my understanding was the 19th Ward is sort of off the table. But Mike, if you want to respond to that, go ahead.
Well, you know, we still don't totally understand exactly what happened why we weren't it was resisted to the degree it was. I know that we 200 of the 2,000 kids that we wanted to help were already registered in 19th Ward schools, but I think there were some that. You brought up the idea that this isn't a shelter, that this is something different. And we, for whatever reason, weren't able to get that communicated. And we kept hearing over and over, in spite of what we'd say, this is a programmatic transitional housing program, it kept coming back as a shelter, and that was something to be feared. And we weren't able to overcome that misperception.
Okay, Barbara in Brighton on the same kind of subject. Go ahead, Barbara.
Hi there. I lived in the 19th Ward for, 25 years or so. And my understanding is that, yes, there was some objection, but there were also a lot of people in favor of it. And the issues were involved with zoning. They had a dumpster planned for the front lawn or something, and there was no playground for the children. And so my understanding is that the association left it to the city to decide, and the zoning board went against it, and that's why it was turned down, because the 19th Ward has a number of, you might say, good deed places in the ward. And, of course, its history is such that, they would never be a NIMBY type of place. So I just want people to be careful about characterizing the 19th Ward as, simply turning this down in fear, because that's not the case.
Thanks for the phone.
I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, Barbara. Thanks for the phone call. Mike and Anna, go ahead.
I'll just say one thing.
Yeah, Mark Cassini, supervisor of the Town of Gates. Go ahead, Mark.
Bad Evan.
You're yelling at me? What did I do?
I'm kidding.
No, I listen, I don't want to demean you know, the concerns that people in the 19th ward have about this label. I'm simply trying to understand. I'm an outsider. I don't not only do I not live
here's
in the 19th
the
ward,
line.
I wasn't at those meetings.
Here's the bottom line. You know, I'm sure all those things are true. The 19th Ward has some wonderful, wonderful neighborhoods and some very caring and giving people. For whatever reason, it fell through. It's done. We love you in the 19th Ward. And I know the Open Door Mission wants no hard feelings with anybody.
At all.
But we're grateful that you're in Gates. And, you know, the fact that it didn't work out in the 19th Ward is nothing to be ashamed of. It was one of those things, and it's an opportunity now for the Gates community.
There's really no finger pointing from us, and I don't mean it to come across that way. So if it was interpreted that way, then...
Well, that's why I said bad Evan. Blame it on Evan.
I'm trying to work through... I'm not asking Mike to point fingers. I'm just trying to understand the facts. So if... When I asked you, was the dumpster going to be on the front lawn? Was there the lack of a playground? Are those things true?
Well, no. They were going to use the same dumpster receptacles that were there originally, and a playground was going in to the front courtyard. So, no, those weren't true.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, and Barbara, I think Barbara calls in with a very good spirit. You know, she's probably surprised to hear that people looked at that situation in a NIMBY context. And so... But let's sort of get away from that train of blaming and NIMBY. Do I think, and have we talked about on this program in the past, how there is a risk at times of people saying the right things but then not being willing to do them when the chips are down? Yes, and I think that's a risk. I think later this hour we may hear from the folks at Villa of Hope. They've gone through their own issues in East Rochester, where I happen to live, right near, and my wife owns a business, right near a potential group home that got kind of shouted down last year. So do I think that there are some valid reasons to worry about NIMBY? Yes, but if you live in the 19th Ward, I'm certainly not saying that everybody in the 19th Ward is unwelcoming. And I know Mike and Anna are not saying that.
No.
We're just trying to set sort of a historical perspective on what happened and where they go next. Okay, so then now some questions about who's going to be eligible. Because, you know, in a best-case scenario, as Mark said, you may serve 10%, but that's still a lot of people who won't be able to use the facility. So how do you sort of prioritize who ends up using this facility? Anna?
We're going to be working directly with the homeless program, which is now the Families in Transition program with the school district. So not only the city school district, but also with Gates and even Greece, because our understanding is that the three districts are kind of collaborating with the Families in Transition program. So we're relying heavily on the programs to identify the families with the most need and who are certainly the most ready and able to work within a program like this that does have some structure and routine. To make sure that it's a successful and a good fit. So we are keeping it because of the facility and the setup of the facility. We are limiting our intake to children in elementary school. So child in elementary school and certainly their younger siblings and mom would be eligible.
Okay. And what are the parameters for potentially, essentially, I must say rejecting it. Let's say they come to live there, but, you know, you will kick them out, for lack of a better term, if what happens?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's going to be expectations. First and foremost, safety is the number one goal. So if anyone is, you know, for example, you know, you know, we're going to have lights off and curfew time and everyone needs to be fulfilling their goals and, you know, the children need to be at school and doing their homework. So if someone's, you know, causing significant issue that's creating a distraction or detriment to the rest of the families in the facility, they're making a choice not to abide by the rules, the expectations in the building.
Okay. And when it comes to help long-term, you know, long-term success and stability, especially for these often single mothers, might mean something different. It might mean work. It might mean, you know, treating addiction of some kind. Mm-hmm. So what are, is there a generalized goal? Is it work related? What are the goals for that?
Yeah, it's going to, first and foremost, it's going to be work related. Okay. We want our benchmark for success in this program is complete independence upon completion of the program. So we want these families to move out with jobs and the ability to sustain their own housing and, you know, to be able to support their families. That's the benchmark for success.
That's a difficult road to get to often, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. You know, very.
Is that why you're saying 6 to 9 months? Could it be longer,
yes,
or will you set a cutoff?
Yes. It could be longer. Yeah. If we're seeing real progress that just needs a little little bit more time, absolutely, we'll make that happen.
Okay.
And then we're also,
flexible.
Yes. And also, we're going to be following our families for a full year, at least after they leave us, to follow them with case management and support services to ensure that they're sticking with the goals and the plan while they were here.
I think that's obviously important. I mean, the conversations we've had on this program just about helping people with transitional housing. Mm-hmm. This, and again, this is not to sort of condescend to our brothers and sisters in the homeless community. Mm-hmm. This is just being realistic about the human condition. If you put someone in housing, mm-hmm. you can't just assume, you know,
right.
they're off and
yeah.
running. You
right.
know, they need some follow-up, right.
No, we say all the time that, you know, the 30 guys in my shelter last night came from an apartment. They weren't able to navigate apartment living and the lifestyle they were living. If they could, they would be in the apartment they left. So a lot of folks need that housing next versus housing first. Okay, you've lost your housing. You're not in a position where you're able to navigate that life. Let's get your life stabilized, and let's get you back into housing when you're stabilized. And that's what transitional and supportive housing is all about.
This long-term residential care facility for women and children will be different than what you operate currently at the Open Door Mission.
Sure.
But there are certain standards, I assume, that you will take. You know, what have you learned from the success that you have had at Open Door Mission that you think you can apply, Mike, even though it's a different population that you'll serve?
Sure. Well, you know, we're been moving towards healthy shelter at our shelter over the last 5 years, where there's expectations, and it's the opposite of low barrier. We want to intervene in your life and get you delivered from your destructive behaviors and get you into a different path. We want to do things that spark renewed hope so that you feel that you can have more hope. You know, we have a mandatory shower program. We just think that's not to be discipline. That's to be if a guy hasn't had a regular shower and forgets what it feels like to take a hot shower and climb into clean sheets while we're washing his undergarments overnight, he forgets what that feels like, and he slips into those sheets with a clean shower, and he has rekindled hope, and he thinks, maybe I can do better. We work with guys that, you know, if you work with us on your next step towards a more permanent living situation, we'll waive the daily bed assignment and give you a bed for 2 weeks. Now that you've got a bed for 14 nights, what's the next step we can take? And we work with you individually, customly, on the next step, and it could be as low as getting an ID again, or getting a fingerprint scan for an ID, or coming back with a job application, because what that does is that rekindles hope, and guys start taking steps on their own.
Okay.
And our men's program is another story. We have a 12-month residential drug and alcohol addiction recovery now on Plymouth Avenue that has a 70% success rate, even with guys that are struggling with heroin right now. And we offer that program free of charge. One of the biggest digs against what's not happening in the heroin epidemic, and I think epidemic is too small a word sometimes, is that the insurance companies won't pay for residential care. But that's what you need.
We just talked about this yesterday.
Why they don't fund it? Because it costs about $5,000 a month to offer it. And because of our volunteerism, because of our faith-based, and because of our private funding stream, we can do it. More and more we are.
We had a group of mothers on the program yesterday whose kids are battling heroin addiction.
Oh,
and they feel... They feel exactly what you just said. They felt like they were blindsided by dealing with insurance that they thought they could get and were denied. You think they were saying they think it's money based. Do you think it's money?
Well, I think that I think that 2 weeks of detox and 90 days of outpatient isn't cutting it. You need longer-term care.
Right.
You need residential care, and it's very expensive. That's what I think.
How much more heroin are you seeing now than you did 5-10 years ago, Mike?
I think it's uncalculable. It's off the hook. You know, to see overdoses out there at 400 and 500%, to see deaths up 200 and 300%. I mean, I think that it creeped up on everybody, Evan. I think when I look at it, it's because it didn't creep up on us with minivans down on, you know, in the drug markets. It creeped up on us with prescriptions going to suburban homes, and it was all legal. And you got your addiction in your house in suburbia by your doctor. You couldn't see it coming.
Yeah, that's exactly what we've been talking about. So our listeners are often wondering what they can do two things. If you missed the conversation yesterday on this program about heroin and insurance companies, there is a public town hall meeting next Tuesday night at 6:30 at Genesee Community College. So if you know anyone dealing with addiction, heroin addiction or prescription drug, and you are struggling or they're struggling to deal with insurance, the AG's office will be there and others will be there helping you out. That's 6:30 at Genesee Community College next Tuesday night. And if you're hearing about what's going on here as an email from a listener named Kelly, she just writes to the program. She's asking, you know, sort of what people can do and are there other facilities like this? Let's hit this in two ways. First of all, Mike Hennessy, are there long-term residential care facilities for women and children in this community already?
We could only find one other organization that has takes women off the street without DHS funding, without any funding streams. It takes women in a shelter, and that was Bethany House. Was there another?
Well, there's two different answers to that. So there's Bethany House doesn't require DHS funding, but they're an emergency shelter, and they certainly have supported our need for this facility. But then there's also programs like Sojourner House, who's transitional, but who has also just been, unfortunately, one of the has just been hit by these funding cuts from HUD. So Sojourner House has a fantastic transitional housing program. And Wilson Commencement Park is another one as well. But again, as we're seeing the funding getting cut, there's this need to be able to fill in some of the gaps.
Sure. That's in the 19th Ward, by the way. I want to mention that for all you folks out there, Sojourner House is in the 19th Ward.
So, okay. And again,
a plug.
On the what we can do, you've got to raise money. Mike mentioned the figure $1.5 million. Are you in technically a quiet phase now? Are you raising money publicly now?
Yeah, we are.
So get in touch with the mission if you want to contribute.
OpenDoorMission.com. You can reach me. My direct line is 325-3242.
Okay. Let me do this. Bryce in Rochester, we're going to take your call next. We got to get our only short break of the hour in. So we'll take that break, come back to your phone calls, talk a little bit more about what's going on with the Open Door Mission as they move forward with their long-term residential care facility for women and children, which will happen to be in Gates. The Gatestown Supervisor's Mark Cassini, he's here. He's also running for Congress, by the way. We may hit a few other issues with him before the end of the hour. So short break, your phone calls, and more next. Coming up in our second hour, are we putting kids at risk by overdoing it with childhood athletics? Kids are having to play the same sport year-round just to stay competitive. It's not a very balanced athletic schedule. Some kids have to play multiple games in one day. They're on a school league and then one or two travel leagues. There's a lot of pressure, and doctors are concerned about the health impacts. We'll talk about it. Welcome back to Connections. Bryce in Rochester, next up. Go ahead, Bryce.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
So I was just, I'd like to say that what I just heard, I just turned the program on, and what they're doing sounds like an absolutely fantastic thing. And I think it'll, be able to help a lot of people. But what I'd like to talk about is, currently I'm actually in a rehab program for opiates in Rochester. Just came from a 28-day inpatient program. And, I think there needs to be a lot of work done in these actual programs. I mean, I go 3 days a week for 3 hours a day, and we literally don't even talk about recovery in our group. It's just kind of, how are you feeling today? And then people, it's just like you're hanging out outside. And it's very frustrating to me because, I'm the main reason why I'm there is because I'm taking Suboxone. And if I, if I don't go, then I'll lose my script. But I'm not finding any other help at these programs besides, what I'm just getting the Suboxone. That's it. And it's really sad,
Bryce, I know a lot of people can relate to that. Mike?
It's very disheartening to hear that the program that he's in isn't being an effective for him. Our program is very active, very busy, a lot of curriculum, a lot of devotionals, a lot of time, and our faith-based aspect is we think is the most important part of it because we're looking for permanent change, not temporary change. And, when I hear that, it just makes my heart sick that you don't feel like you're getting even the outpatient service that you're getting is effective.
What are you going to do next, Bryce?
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, what are you going to do next?
Well, what I'm doing is, I'm actually going to a lot of self-help. I'm doing AA. Even though, you know, alcohol isn't necessarily my problem, I find that it's a lot larger of a support group than NA is. And that's where I'm kind of getting the majority of my help, I feel like.
I think that's a good instinct, because the 12-step program is an effective program. It's the 12 steps started as a biblically based program. They're biblical principles that they took most of the God out and put in a higher power so that it would have broader appeal. But the principles of the 12-step program are indeed effective and working, and I think that's a good call. I'd love to tell you I had a bed available at the Open Door Mission, but I don't right now. In fact, we're going to be going into this. We got a 200-year-old building that really needs some crazy infrastructure to fix. So we're going to have limited beds.
Is that something that people could volunteer for to
certainly
help you guys out? Or is there anything?
That'd be awesome. You go to opendoormission.com/volunteer and fill out an application, and we'll get in touch with you. Absolutely.
Yeah, awesome. Because I'm a carpenter, and I have lots of skills as far as that goes, and I'd be totally willing to do something.
There's nothing more effective than a former addict telling a current addict that you can make it. That's how it works.
Yeah, awesome.
Bryce, good luck to you. Thank you so much for calling the program, and I hope you find what you need and you continue down a good road here. That's an example. That's just one example of the many challenges that our community is facing. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to Mike Hennessy and Anna Valeria Eisman from the Open Door Mission. They are moving forward with a plan to help women and kids in crisis with a long-term residential care facility that will be in Gates, and the Gatestown supervisor is Mark Assini. Mark, remind the audience where that facility will be.
It's at Holy Ghost Church. It's the rectory. It's on Coldwater Road in the town of Gates.
Okay. And Mark is running for Congress, and we're going to have Mark's opponent in that race, Louise Slaughter, who he knows well, on the program a few weeks from now. And one of the many subjects I suspect we'll talk about, Mark, and I'll set aside a few minutes now just kind of try to cover these, is high-speed rail. You saw Louise Slaughter talking about high-speed rail. In fact, she's talked about it many times over the years. Mm-hmm. First of all, in general, your position on high-speed rail?
I think it makes sense when you're connecting a very large population basis and you can get there quickly. It does not make sense from Rochester to Buffalo. The plan that she's publicly endorsed, you can drive faster and it's cheaper to drive by car than it would be to take the high-speed rail. And my take is any federal money that's coming in should be going towards roads and bridges. And just today, we met with the GTC. I'm a member as the supervisor of the Town of Gates on the Supervisors Association. Met with the GTC, and they're talking about the parkway and not having enough funds to maintain the parkway. I mean, that's a dangerous roadway right now, and the state is saying, "Gee, we're not sure. We'll make some minor repairs, but we're not sure what we're going to do. We may have to shut it down, maybe cut it down to two lanes." In the meantime, there is no money to rehab the parkway. So what do people do? It's a bad situation. We have one-third of our roads and bridges which are failing or deficient, I should say. In the case of one in the town of Gates, it is failing. And the safety of our family has to come first. Our families drive over these bridges. They drive on these roadways. The buses are taking these kids to school. People are driving to work every day. We have to rebuild the roads. I think there are places in North Korea with better roads than we have. We've got to fix it.
When President Obama sat down with Andrew Ross Sorkin recently for New York Times Magazine, Sorkin wrote a long piece on his economic legacy, going all the way back to his first few weeks in office when economic crisis was hitting, 2008 into 2009. And the question was, should there be a stimulus? How big should it be? And many of the reports at the time indicate that the stimulus would have been bigger if the Republican Congress wanted it to be bigger and would have supported it. And there would have been more money for infrastructure, both for need and for economic development. Would you have voted for a bigger stimulus? Should we spend more federally? And is it for safety first? Is it economic development, or is it both, Mark?
Well, here, let me take a step back. Specifically, we have a dedicated road fund, which is worth about $3.9 billion. A lot of people don't know this, but only one quarter, 25% approximately, of that money actually goes to roads and bridges. The rest of the money is for debt service. A very large portion, over 30%, goes to general fund expenses. That's not the intent of this dedicated road fund. In addition, the governor is holding, and this is kind of a breaking story. I just found this out today in the GTC. The governor is holding 30% of the federal transportation dollars, and he is deciding where it should go around the state. That's not his job. It's actually up to these councils, these transportation councils around the state of New York, to determine the need. He's decided he's going to circumvent those councils, and he, the governor, is going to decide where the money should go. And obviously, in upstate, we're not getting our fair share. But to your point, we can't continue, you know, even if we increased the funding, if only 25% of the money is going to roads and bridges, it's not going to help. We've got to go to the root cause of the problem, and that is the money that we are raising in federal gas tax and, in a state gas tax and other state fees is not going to its intended purpose. And the result is our roads are literally falling apart beneath us.
Okay, so the money should be, it should be there already. It sounds like you think we spend enough.
Oh,
and that
we have the money.
Be getting more here.
And I am amazed this has not become a bigger issue. This is ridiculous. It's reckless to take the money that people are paying into this system and then put it off to other things. It's incredible. It's incredible.
Okay, so you're going to seek to change that if you're in Congress.
Oh, if I'm in Congress, I can tell you right now, I will be meeting with the delegation. I am not going to tolerate a governor that's going to hold on to 30% of our federal transportation dollars and decide, instead of working with the regions around the state of New York, where the money is going to go. And I certainly am not going to tolerate the fact that that money is going to the general fund of the state of New York. Listen, if you want to raise taxes for the general fund, then do it with, you know, tax dollars that are supposed to be going to the general fund, not with transportation dollars. I mean, it is amazing. It's so reckless, and nobody, I think I'm the lone wolf out there howling, you know, at the moon, saying this is wrong. You know, it's got to change.
Last time you were on this program, you surprised some listeners by not being as full-throated in support of what we've seen with economic development councils and photonics.
Oh, my
goodness. I'm not saying you're opposed to photonics, but you know, for example, Republican Tom Reed. He was there putting out a statement on the big rollout. Joe Biden comes last year. They roll out the photonics announcement. It's sort of a bipartisan party. Everyone kind of taking credit, Republicans and Democrats. You came on this program, offered some concern, and now we don't know where this is going to go, but we see investigation of Economic Development Council activity, more specifically related to potentially the Buffalo Billion, Dr. Caliaros, and where the money may be going. Again, it may turn into nothing, and it may not. We don't know. But do you feel any validation? Does this?
Oh, I think it goes to the point, no matter what happens, this is an issue, and it may turn into a very big issue down the road. And I'll give you specific examples. But you cannot take billions of dollars of economic development money, taxpayers' money, put it into regional councils, not track a single dime of where the money is going by company, and who are getting the contracts. That's ridiculous. This is taxpayer money. There should be a full audit of that money. When you invest in a company, you get an annual report. It should be the same. When your tax dollars are going into the tune of billions, you should be getting a tracking report of where the money is going and whether or not it's creating jobs specifically. Let's look at a couple of projects that were supposed to take off and create anywhere from 800 to 1,400 jobs in one case, 1,000 jobs in another, 600 in another. Let's start with the Biosciences Manufacturing Center. It's not going to be built. And the reason it's not going to be built now, even though they came and they said, hey, look, we've got the cardboard check here. We're going to give it money. Now, we don't know how much money went. They're saying, well, not a dime has been spent on it yet. I don't know that. I haven't seen an audit. I haven't seen a report. I know in the case of the Solar Power Consortium, they have spent a lot of money on that. We don't know how much because they won't give us the financial report, but they bought a building. They're bringing in equipment. It was supposed to create anywhere from 800 to 1,400 jobs, and there's two cars in the parking lot.
But I'm not at all disputing the fact that some of these public-private partnerships don't meet their jobs targets. We've got a long history of that. And Rochester is not unique in that. But the question is, how much time do you give them? Are you being fair to them to meet those benchmarks?
Well, I think I'm being more than fair. Let's take the Solar Power Consortium, for instance. That was supposed to open in 2013. And actually, one of the local channels, and I won't mention their name because there is only one local channel, WXXI, the one local channel explored this story and asked Mr. Calieros, gee, what happened? You were supposed to open in 2013. This knucklehead has seen. He says he only sees two cars in the parking lot. What's going on? You know what the answer we got was? Well, gee, it's long lead time items. It just takes, you know, a long time to get. And I used to be in supply chain management. I worked in manufacturing. And I asked the reporter to go back to Mr. Calieros and ask him, hey, what item was it? How long was the lead time? And when did you order it? You know what the answer was? Nothing. They didn't answer. They backed off because it's baloney. And so the bottom line is, if something was supposed to open and be up and running in 2013, it's now into 2016, into May. I don't know. I think that's, you know, a couple of years is enough. We've had other companies that have gone Chapter 11. We've had other companies that got money and they collapsed, they folded, laid people off, hostile takeovers. I could give you the list. I don't want to bore your listeners. But we got a problem. And until we open this up and make the process transparent, I think it's also subject to abuse and giving my buddy the contract when the money does come through. And I think that's maybe what we're going to see.
All right. So if you're elected this fall, I think it's important for our listeners to understand what your position is going to be, because right now, again, I should point out, nobody knows where these sort of investigations, and you hear that the FBI is involved, you hear the U.S. Attorney's Office from the Southern District could be involved, looking at economic development councils. We don't know where that goes. But what we do know is I'm sure there are people listening who have supported photonics in Rochester, supported those projects, and they're concerned that if you get elected to Congress, you know, do you have the power to throw a wrench in it? Would you try to limit what support
comes
in?
The opposite. Just the opposite. Please don't be nervous. I'm not telling you I wouldn't fight for those jobs. I'm telling you that if your tax dollars are going into an effort, whether it's photonics, whether it's bioenergy, whether it's solar energy, whatever it is going into, I want to make sure your dollars are spent wisely. Right now, the council and the leadership on the council can't even tell you how much has gone to what company and what contractor. And that is unacceptable. The comptroller has said this. The comptroller has come out concerned about the transparency. It's not about fighting the projects. It's about making sure that your money and your friend's money and your neighbor's money is going where it's supposed to go. And I will tell you right now, we don't know. And we don't know whether or not it's yielding any results. And that is unacceptable. We need to make sure that people are accountable when they're using our tax dollars.
Do you think Rochester will be and should be a photonics hub?
I think we have all the technology, the support, like the University of Rochester, RIT, all the facilities to be able to do that. Yes, I do. I think in order to be a hub, we need to change the way we do business. You cannot have the type of regulation and the type of taxation that exists. I mean, we're the number one tax state, you know, in the nation and the number one tax country in the world. And quite frankly, it's not conducive to competing. So if a breakthrough comes, you're not going to be able to lock down a company to stay here. They may go somewhere else where it's cheaper to do business.
I'm not going to argue that we're not one of the most taxed states, or if not the most taxed state. I bet I could find a country that's more taxed, don't you think?
I think you will not find an industrialized country that is more taxed, no.
All right, before we let you go, because we've been talking about what opened the hour, what's going on in Gates, some final thoughts from you, Mark, on what you expect to happen with the Open Door Missions project and why you have been supporting it.
What I expect to happen is that moms and their children who are now living in cars or surfing from couch to couch, who are unable to get their child to school and maybe unable to get their life in order, are going to have a chance now. And they won't become a statistic 10 years from now or 15 years from now. They're going to become productive citizens. They're going to get a good education. Mom's going to find a job. They're going to settle. They're going to be a blessed asset to this community, and that's what I expect will happen.
Anna, what do you think?
Well, this has been a couple years in the works now, so I'm just, you know, honestly, I'm just anxious to get some kids in the door and to have the experience of these children realizing that they have gifts and they have strengths, and that their moms get to recognize the gifts and strengths in their children because they've never had the opportunity to do that before, and to just rebuild these families and get them ready to take over.
And logistically, Anna, if you can raise the money you need and meet that target of opening this long-term residential care facility for women and children by the fall of next year.
Yes.
How much in advance do you need to be done with it so you can get the women and kids in the door for the start of the school year?
No time frame?
Yeah. I mean, you've got to be done and ready to go by what, next summer?
Summer, yeah.
Summer?
Yeah, because we want to get, you know, transportation in place and all of that. Yeah, so summer, yes.
And that way you'll be able to get the women and kids in the door. Final thoughts, Mike Hennessy?
Yeah, I just, all along I've said that as we looked at this situation, if someone doesn't have an impact on this population of kids, 43% of kids K through 3 chronically absent from school, if someone doesn't initiate a program and intervene with these kids, then we're going to they're going to become the statistic that's going to make 44% graduation rates look really bad, because these kids are going to have a hard time getting through elementary school.
The website, if you want to get involved, is what, Mike Hennessy?
OpenDoorMission.com.
OpenDoorMission.com. And a reminder, Mr. Sini running for Congress. His opponent, Louis Slaughter, will be on this program in a couple of weeks. We always offer equal time. And I know we're going to see a lot more of Marcus Sini and Louis Slaughter as we head for November. Yes, sir?
Yes, sir.
And no matter who wins that election, we'll see more of them, because Ms. Slaughter has been accessible. Mark has always been one of the most accessible local politicians. And if he becomes a federal politician, I know that won't change as well.
That's right. Hugs and kisses, my brother. I'll be there.
Thank you, Mark. A short break. Much more Connections coming up next.